Would you like to come and stall it?
Ah, will you just stall it, look?
I'd like to come and stall it.
I'm not really in the mood.
Well, come on and bleed and stall it.
Yeah, house hatcher.
I'm not a house hatcher.
We'll stall it for a crack. We're gonna have a laugh.
How are you doing, everybody? Welcome to the second part of this mad deep dive on Charles Manson and the Manson family.
Folly ado.
Yep.
It's good stuff so far. Do you want to give us a little rundown of what this fella's... He's not a lunatic yet, is he? He hasn't really... He was just a bit unhinged. Unstable background and kind of doing a bit of robbing here and there. And
spent a lot of time in prison.
Yeah.
Pulled a lot of knives on people.
Did he undergo some crazy shit in prison as well? Like he was part of the MKUltra campaign?
Well, there is speculation that when he got out, he was very, very close to people. His probation officer was working for MKUltra.
Yeah, there was a crossover.
Not directly, but one of the clinics that were giving out free LSD.
Class.
Did you say? Did he didn't do any bad shit, yeah?
Yeah, nothing too bad. Like, he didn't fucking... did he?
He raped someone in prison.
Literally.
When he was in, like, a Young Offenders Institute or whatever, he raped one of the other boys. He hasn't yet got as bad as he's going to get. He had scared Dennis Wilson of the Beach Boys away, though. So, a quick recap from part one.
We were listening to the tune.
We heard very briefly about the Tate and LaBianca murders. We then heard a bit about Charles Manson's early years, which were pretty grim. Remember, he came from a very strict Christian town, and his dad left, first of all, and then the stepdad left, and the mom left him, and he was bouncing between. He had a very strict Uncle Bill who sent him to school in a girl's dress.
Oh, yeah.
All this stuff when he was four. We heard how he bounced through all the different correctional institutions of different kinds from the time of a child through his teenage years and then into being an adult. He was in prison. He hypnotized Danny Trejo. He got out and he set about basically bringing together a range of beliefs from the Book of Revelations, which he learned in his childhood, to a bit of Scientology. Dale Carnegie's How to Make Friends or Win Friends and Influence People.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah, so he mixed all these together, went off to San Francisco in the summer of 1967 and started collecting his followers with his kind of new age guru act. So he gradually builds the Manson family up to a couple of dozen. Two of the girls are picked up by Dennis Wilson, drummer of the Beach Boys, then arguably one of the biggest bands in the world. They end up living in Dennis Wilson's house for 6 months. They wreck the place. They eventually scare Dennis enough that he just leaves without warning, move somewhere else, at which point the Manson family have to find somewhere else to go, and they go to Spawn Ranch, which is I think about 20 miles outside the city. It's an old TV and movie set where they used to film westerns.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah,
that's,
I don't think that was actually filmed in the original Spawn Ranch, but that's what it is. Yeah. So the ranch that Brad Pitt's character visits, that is Spawn Ranch. That's what that's supposed to be. They head out there. They meet George Spawn, who is the owner. Charles Manson charms him, as he tends to do with people. And the Manson family help George, who is, what, he's 80? I think 80, 82. His wife is long dead. He's very lonely. It's just him and the kind of the ranch hands who live on Spawn Ranch. And the Manson family show up and they start doing all the jobs that he's doing around the very large ranch. It's a big place.
Bit of maintenance.
Mm. There's also one of the Manson girls, Lynn Fromm.
From where?
You remember you that? Yeah.
You just set him up.
Did you have that down in your notes that I'd say that?
I just knew. I just had a feeling. Lynn Fromm, who George gave the nickname Squeaky, because how she would react when he pinched her bottom.
Oh my God.
Anyway, she became basically his live-in girlfriend / servant. And she would both keep George sweet for Charlie and whatever Charlie wanted. And also she'd spy on any conversations George would have with the ranch hands, which you'd really be going into the weeds there, but they were trying to get him to sell the place. Manson didn't like this. Does not turn out well for one of the ranch hands.
Go. Who? One of the Giddles?
No, Shorty Shea was his name. We'll get to him later.
Okay,
Shorty Shea.
Himself and Manson fell out. Didn't go well.
How could you fall out with such an affable person?
Yeah. George Spawn, bit of trivia. If you like ranch owner trivia,
I love it. Yeah, I'm here for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's given real ranch owner.
He had 10 kids and he named them after
Charles.
No, he was 80 odd when Charles Manson showed up. So he'd already had the kids.
Okay.
What does a ranch owner have lots of?
Wagons. Horses.
Yeah.
Horses.
Named his kids after his horses.
Fuck off. Horses come before the kids.
Mm.
They're all very strange people. Horses have really long weird names, like.
There's a big collection like of strange people in this story, I think.
The horse referendum. Divorce referendum, the horse from Father Ted.
Yeah.
Is that an obscure reference?
It was for me. I didn't get it.
Do you remember it now, though?
No.
No worries.
No.
It's grand. Someone will.
Your horse. You had a horse named after you.
I'd love a pint, but I'm not hungry.
Yeah, there's some young fella out in the ranch.
Coming up now, I'd love a pint, but I'm not hungry of the Charles Manson family.
Are you familiar with Angela Lansbury?
Yeah.
The actor.
What was she in?
Murder, She Wrote.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Angela Lansbury's daughter was briefly in the Manson family.
Wow.
How are they all linked?
Wow.
Hollywood, huh?
Her daughter, Deirdre. Fell in with the Manson family. Okay.
Okay.
It's hard to pin down exactly when she was with them, but I have seen a couple of people who were there say that the time they were at Spahn Ranch, the early days at Spahn Ranch, when it was still crazy, but it wasn't quite so menacing. It's going to get very menacing.
Mm.
The menacing levels.
That's what I was saying at the start. It was all right.
Very menacing.
Okay.
Deirdre Lansbury was around in those days. Angela Lansbury's daughter, Deirdre, was around and she fell in with the Manson family. Angela Lansbury and her husband, Peter, said, right, we got to do something. This is a bad crowd she's fallen in with, right?
And I need to keep my acting career going.
Well, she's taking drugs. She's hanging around with these kippies who are quite sinister, all this stuff.
The daughter of?
The daughter. So Angela Lansbury, famous of Murder, She Wrote and so on.
And Judge Judy. She's Judge Judy.
her and her husband,
that's
Peter,
Judge Judy.
They decide, we need to move with our daughter there. We need to just get away from LA. And they move to County Cork.
What?
There you go.
Get the fuck out of here.
There you go.
No, I cannot because I'm trying to tell you something.
Yeah, so there's your first bit of Spahn Ranch trivia. Second bit of Spahn Ranch trivia. I'm just going to play this one for you, right? I don't think I need to tell you who this is.
Judge Judy.
But I will.
Is it Judge Judy?
You're about to hear Bryan Cranston of Breaking Bad, Malcolm in the Middle.
Fucking spoiled it.
Yeah, well, I didn't want you talking over his voice because it's a good story. So, this is Bryan Cranston a couple of years back talking on an American radio show.
Shh. Well, my cousin and I used to go horseback riding at the Spahn Ranch, which is in, it's a community northwest of Los Angeles. And it's very rural. And we would go up there horseback riding. And the last time I did, I was about 12. It was 1968 or late 68, I think, fall. And we were renting our horses. And some guy came in and started screaming, Charlie's on the hill! Charlie's on the hill! And it startled us. We're like, oh, well, what happened? And the old guy who was renting his horse said, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. And everybody there, maybe 8 to 10 people, men and women, jumped on horses and galloped away. And we were, wow, what was that? Well, the old guy brings out two horses that, you know, Central Park horses that are clunk, 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 clunk. And we start to do our horseback ride in the same direction where they went. About 20 minutes later, we see a trail of horses coming back. And the width of this trail is maybe 10 feet. So horses have to pass by each other very closely. And in the middle of this pack, there was one little man with black hair and dark, dead eyes who was on the horse, but he wasn't holding his own reins. The guy in front of him was holding. And he was just sitting kind of wildly like this, just like going with the movement of the horse. And he was just out of his mind. And my cousin and I are passing, and we're looking at him, and like, oh my God. And I looked at him carefully as he was passing. And my cousin said, that must be Charlie. And then we didn't think a thing of it. The following year, we see all the Tate LaBianca murders, and there had been arrest. And here's the picture of, and it was like, oh, Earl. I get on the phone to my cousin and she's going, I was just about to call you. Oh my God, can you believe it? It's like, that was Charlie Manson.
And you're 12 years old at the time.
Yeah. I'll never forget that face. And that's why I'm positive it was him, because it was such a big deal that, you know, Charlie's on the hill, and then staring at him on his way back. And it was just indelible in my memory.
Well, there you go.
Hollywood, what?
Bryan Cranston's a lot older than I thought. If he was 12 in 1968.
That's your takeaway from all of that. Bryan Cranston is older than you thought.
That, and what was a 12-year-old going galloping around on horses for?
What am I doing? My headphones still on.
The Manson family, actually, there was a business at Spahn Ranch where kids would come and go on. They'd ride the horses. And the Manson family used to be the ones who used to operate that business for George Spahn.
It reminds me of Mosny. They used to have like pony riding down in Mosny. You used to be able to get on a pony.
But then if a murderous doomsday cult were running horse rides at Mosny.
Yeah.
So anyway, Manson did not see Spahn Ranch as a permanent home, which was kind of a place they could be for the time being. He didn't like being that close to the city. He wanted to be further away so the girls couldn't run away from him, because he was worried that, you know, he might still lose them. He kind of wanted to get to a point where they just depended on him for survival completely. But also, he hadn't given up his dreams on his music career. So he was sticking around close to LA because he thought he might get the call. You know, he'd been badgering a few producers.
So if he got the call, would he have dropped all of the Manson family? Said, I'm going to do a bit of music.
Well, there's something coming up in a while that might hint that maybe things might have turned out better. We'll get there.
I mean, he's pretty fucked up anyway already, but...
Like, yeah, but maybe lots of fucked up people don't go around and murder lots of innocent people or send
now,
other
but
people.
But for now, it just seems like a nice little community of people like helping out on a ranch and doing little kiddie horse rides.
You're
like,
really doing your best to rehabilitate the reputation.
Just saying, for now, it seems nice. Like, I would go there. I would like to go there on a holiday.
All right. Well, listen, there's your couple of bits of celebrity trivia for Spahn Ranch and the Manson.
Is that all of it?
Celebrity trivia? Yeah. There'll be more.
Celebrities mingling.
Marvin Gaye used to go there. I don't think it was while the Manson family were there, but Marvin Gaye used to visit Spahn Ranch recreationally, ride the ponies.
Anyway. Is there a log?
Don't think so. Okay. So while they're at Spahn Ranch, the Manson family, as close to officially, I suppose, as you can say, they become a doomsday cult. So they believed in apocalypticism. Kind of self-explanatory, and millenarism.
Tell me more what that is.
So that's the belief by a religious or social or political group or movement that there is a coming fundamental transformation of society. Basically, a group says something is on the horizon and it's going to change everything forever. Nothing will ever be the same again. That's millenarism. Millenarianism.
Okay.
And apocalypticism is a religious belief that the end is nigh, basically. Within your lifetime, it's all going to end. So they were believing both these things.
It's not mad that you could just be in that bubble and believe in that. Like,
there was no phones around, like, so you just like believe what you're being told. Easier to brainwash people back then.
Just a step back from the Manson family specifically, the US in general, the world in general, but the US in general, in the late 60s, there is serious social unrest going on for years across America. The civil rights movement would have been kind of at its peak around now. Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy are both assassinated in 1968, which is roughly where we are in our story now, which actually is where we're in the mid and late 1968 is where we are now. You have these two huge assassinations. Martin Luther King's death sparked riots in 100 cities across America. The Vietnam War was still going on. 1968 would have been the highest level of protests against the war. There was a huge rise in student activism. Universities across America like were hotspots for demonstrations and violent clashes between the police. And in 1965, going back a couple of years, you had the Watts riots or the Watts uprising, which is where in South Central LA, basically for the guts of a week, 6 days, it became a war zone. They had to send in the army to retake control. And that was following a black man being beaten up by police. And you had the police chief and the governor saying this is like fighting the Viet Cong, but they're talking about the locals in LA. In 67. Did you ever see the film Detroit? It's called Detroit, isn't it? The
documentary?
No, is it Catherine Bigelow? The one where it's the riots in Detroit.
Is that not in the 90s, though?
No, it's in the 60s. Anyway, in 67 in Detroit, there's a police raid that goes wrong. It's a police raid in the speakeasy. And that also sparked, they were the worst riots in America in over 100 years. There was 43 people killed, over 7,000 arrested. And basically, in the summer of 67, which was a very hot summer across America, there was over 150 race riots in major cities. Like, America is on edge big time. And all of that feeds hugely into Manson's thinking and how he's going to sell his message to his followers. Basically, he's able to point to all this and go, America is splitting here. It's burning, it's fracturing, it's all over the place. Something is going to happen soon. There's going to be some big event soon and nothing is going to be the same again because we can't keep on going like this. So basically, you've got widespread distrust of the government after Vietnam, the JFK assassination also, all that stuff whirling around the background. Remember last time you were talking about how World War II, you'd have lots of people who would have come back from World War II. Either they would have lost one of their parents or those parents would have come home with PTSD. So that's kind of in the very recent past, which has its own shadow cast across the country. Then you have assassination of JFK. And we have covered in this podcast before how that raised doubts. And up until kind of this point in the 60s, it wasn't really a thing where people questioned the government hugely, you know, because in big questions of, are they just completely lying to us about everything? So that idea takes root for the first time ever. So all of it feels like the established social order is falling apart. All these big things are happening. Nobody's really providing answer. People are kind of losing their belief in the way things have been up until this point to a degree. But human nature being what it is, people still like the security of being in a tribe.
Does he, Charles Manson, like fully believe this is happening or is he just manipulating? I see like clued in where he's like, this isn't happening, but I just want to manipulate these people.
Nobody knows, yeah. Or will ever know.
Really?
Yeah. He would say he believed it, but
I don't think he did.
How much of it was him just last episode we were talking about, his whole belief system was just a cobbled together mishmash of different beliefs. So he didn't actually, maybe he did believe it, but maybe he was just taking the best bits. Sure, when he was in prison, he spent a long time talking to the pimps who were in prison and learning from them on how to control women through very harsh treatment. Like, he wasn't looking to make other people's lives better. You know, it wasn't like it started off with good intentions.
Well, Bryan Cranston had a good time. That's all I know.
There was massive protests about income inequality and gender inequality and everything in the 60s. And around this time, a lot of Americans and people in other parts of the world, but specifically talking about America here, are kind of looking for a new idea, a new leader, a guru. Stop me if any of this sounds familiar.
Charles Manson.
No. What the world we're in now, I think, is very familiar to this.
Oh, we're talking about Donald Trump right now.
Well, it could be Trump.
Tommy Robinson.
Kind of like...
Could be Tommy Robinson.
Darren Conway.
Could be Darren Conway.
Oh, I've loads of advice.
I just think that you see a lot of it now. Lots of things going on to destabilize faith.
Tommy Robinson, who's that?
The English fella.
I'm thinking of...
Big racist English fella.
Yeah.
You're thinking of Tony Robbins?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, you bundle all this together. Yeah, throw in this underlying unease about where is this world going?
It's a perfect recipe for him.
Exactly. You take a manipulative but very charismatic fellow who fancies himself a prophet.
And he's a great musician.
Currency of the day. He's a great musician, you know. You hand him this social situation and then all these very vulnerable kids. We talked last time about how a lot of them were, you know, had gone through stuff in their earlier lives and so on, made them very susceptible to someone turning up and putting an arm around them or telling them they're beautiful for the first time in their lives. And next thing, they're living in Dennis Wilson's house. And I'm thinking, hey, this isn't bad.
It's not. Well, it was.
So, and all of this ends up at Helter Skelter. So we're at Spawn Ranch. All these things have collided together. The Manson family, and this is Helter Skelter.
What the fuck? The album? The Beatles album?
Well, Helter Skelter is the song. So, but the White Album, yes, the Beatles White Album, is the bedrock of Charles Manson's Helter Skelter theory, which is what he used to to convince the family to murder all those people.
What's Helter Skelter?
Right, just before we get into that, before we get into Helter Skelter, something I just want to mention again. I mentioned this in the first episode. So what I'm going through now with Helter Skelter in particular, but with all the details, there's kind of an official version of events.
And then?
Then there's people who have, over the decades since, started picking holes in it and
changing it up.
Yeah. There's loads of mad conspiracy stuff. There is some crazy out there conspiracy stuff, which, Joe?
Yeah. Give me all of them.
I won't be holding that back from you. But there is some quite credible stuff. It's not to say that the official story isn't true. A lot of it is fully accepted by a lot of people. But there's just one or two details. The only reason I mention it now is just, like with JFK, we went through kind of the official version and then we came back around and went, well, what if this is the case? And that's different. And people came back and said this and so on. People came back and questioned it later on. The official version, so to speak, it's largely based, not entirely, but largely based on the book Helter Skelter, which was written by Vince Bugliosi, who was the prosecutor.
Vince what?
Bugliosi.
No.
Say it again?
No. No. He was the prosecutor. He wrote this book after the trial.
Who was he prosecuting?
Manson and the Manson family. Helter Skelter, the book. It's the best-selling true crime book of all time. Helter Skelter has sold over 7 million copies. Biggest selling true crime.
Big number, is it?
That doesn't feel like a lot of books.
Yeah, but you too.
7 million, like, come on. Many people's in the
world. Bible has more than that.
You are the, I would expect so. You are the two who were unimpressed by how many albums Michael Jackson sold.
Still am.
And how many copies of Grand Theft Auto were sold.
Still disappointing.
Is the Bible considered a true crime novel?
There was more Grand Theft Auto sold than Michael Jackson.
There's a lot of conversations going on here. I'm so lost.
And is it what he said? Is it?
Anyway, what I'm going to explain to you now is what's the Helter Skelter theory. This is pretty much what was put forward at trial when they went to trial. This was kind of the version that the investigators came up with and said, this is what was going on. It's contested, including by Charles Manson. He says it ain't true. Bits of it are definitely true. Bits of it are questioned. We'll get to all those bits and pieces later on.
Do it now.
No, because if we do it now, and if we stop and start every time we come to a bit that's contested, if there's two different versions of a story, which there often is, I'll tell you that. But there's no point in like stopping and starting every single time and saying, here's the accepted and contested version. We just confuse ourselves. Like with JFK, what we'll do is we'll come back around to the...
Who was he?
Right, anyway.
I'm acting up like, no, sorry. I'll stop. No, I'm not in that humor today.
Do you want to know about Helter Skelter?
Go on.
Helter Skelter is the theory that there is a coming race war. So the black people in America were going to rise up and take over the entire country. And this was Manson's theory. But once they took over the entire country, they would not be smart enough to rule the world. At which point the Manson family would return, having, until that point, hid out in a big hole in the ground out in the desert.
He hid out?
In bloody mad.
There's a few more details that make it a little more of a plausible theory. The hole in the ground bit, not the other stuff, the racial stuff.
Okay.
That was what he told them. He told them they're going to rise up and kill everybody, and then we few dozen white people will hide in a hole in the ground way out in the desert in Death Valley. And when the right time comes, we'll emerge and retake over the world.
The world.
Pretty much.
Because he was apocalyptic. He kind of thought the world would end and they'd be the last one surviving. Is that what he kind of thought? Mad Maxi.
Pretty much. Yeah, very Mad Maxi stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
It reminds me more of The Hills Have Eyes.
Yeah.
Deranged people.
When they were on Spahn Ranch, Manson would kind of do his best to isolate the family from all the news. So unless the news was basically about a race riot, or black people causing trouble, Charles Manson was not letting them see it. But he would filter through stuff like Black Panthers demos or things that might turn into riots, that kind of thing. He let them see all that stuff to try and reinforce this idea that there's an uprising coming and you'll be one of the victims of it if you're not ready for it.
It's a bit racist.
It's extremely racist. I'm going to skip over some of the language and stuff, but... Yeah, it's...
Is there any details to whether he would have been a fan of the Hitler fella?
Well, he carved a swastika into his forehead, so...
Yeah, okay, so he was then. He was a bit of a fan. Yeah, right. Some of the ideology seems a bit familiar.
Yeah.
Even the hiding out bit. I think it's fun. Like, Marta just watched Falling Down.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever see Falling Down?
Yeah, a long time ago, but yeah.
The only stream that she could get was, it was dubbed over in Italian. And so she was still reading the English subtitles, but it was in Italian. And it doesn't have the same ring to it if it's not that German. When it's like, Mamma Mia.
No, Falling Down is the one, your man goes crazy because he can't get the burger.
Falling Down, sorry, yeah.
Downfall.
Downfall.
Yeah.
I was thinking of Falling Down as well, your man.
What's his? Goes off, who's in Falling Down again?
Michael Douglas.
Michael Douglas, yeah.
It's class.
Yeah.
Fucking class.
Yeah.
I watched The Godfather 2 before and I had no subtitles. And like most of it's just like in Italian. I was just like that.
Class.
Like, oh, deadly.
But yeah, he was just hiding out in a bunker while the minions, not even the minions, while the like Hitler youth were the last line of defense, and they were out just like, for Hitler. And they were like only 11 and 10 and they were going out and just being
little shit
slaughtered by the Americans and the Russians. Russians. Well, he was just hiding out and whatever, probably killed himself. Or did he? That's another deep dive for a different episode.
The Hitler fella.
Is this Hitler in Argentina?
Who knows?
Buenas noches, mein Führer. Simpsons reference.
Was it?
Yeah. Okay. Do you want to know about the White Album?
Yeah.
Is that a Beatles album, yeah?
Yes. So it's actually just called The Beatles. It's a self-titled album, but it was the one with just the plain white cover, so everyone calls it the White Album.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because Jay-Z has the Black Album?
Metallica has a Black Album. Jay-Z has a Black Album. Metallica's one, I think, was self-titled, but people just called it the Black Album.
Ah, okay. Okay.
Because it has a black cover.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's a good album. It's always Jay-Z's black
album. Tell us about the White Album. Tell us about the...
Jay-Z's Blueprint is better than his black album, though. Anyway.
Who gives a fuck about Jay-Z?
Today we just discovered Owen is a big fan of rap.
You're a very... something wrong with you today.
I'm grand.
Are you sure?
I'm invested in the story.
I want to make sure you're having a good time.
Are you having a good time?
Blueprint's a great album.
It is a good album. Jay-Z is pretty good.
Mm.
Do you want to talk about Jay-Z?
He was at his peak of his powers back in the Blueprint days, I'd say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Joel's trying to get his head around the fact that... The White Album, The Beatles. So Charles Manson did like the odd bit of music, as you can guess. He was a musician himself. He was a fan of The Doors and the Moody Blues. But there was one band he thought were the truth. The Beatles.
Oh, yeah.
Soon as The White Album came out, he went out and he got it on vinyl. This was late... 68, November 68, it's released. He takes it back to Spahn Ranch. He listens to it on repeat. He listens to it backwards, forwards, whatever way. He plays it at night during his sermons.
Is this because the Beach Boys toned him down?
I mean, maybe. I don't know.
It seems it's like, fuck the Beach Boys. It was the Blur and Oasis of the day, wasn't it? It was Beach Boys or the Beatles.
I hope it was just out of spite.
Yeah, I think it was. Definitely.
Spite and madness and racism.
Yeah.
But a bit of spite.
Yeah. So maybe he was just attracted to the name of the album.
Maybe. So he takes it and remember we were talking about he does his like nightly kind of sermons with, they all take acid, or he gives them all acid.
For free. Legend.
That's right, he was getting this for free off the CIA. So he's handing it
was
out.
He?
Yeah. We talked about that in the MK Ultra episode.
But was he?
Don't worry. The last episode of this series, we're coming back to all that stuff.
Yes.
But was he?
Yeah, no, he was.
Okay.
And his parole officer, who was running they had a note.
Happy.
They said they've never seen a bigger change in a person than they saw in Charles Manson in the first year or so that he was working. He was giving him free LSD.
Class.
If you like a conspiracy theory.
I don't. I hate them.
Yeah, but this fella does, so.
I fucking love it. Keep it coming.
So, we'll come back to all that stuff in a couple episodes time.
Couple? Many episodes is this going to be?
About four.
I don't know. We're on two now. And you keep interrupting me, so.
Sorry. I just keep thinking
seven
about
episodes
Jay-Z.
Time. So he's listening to that White Album backwards and forwards, sideways, and upside down.
He's talking about it non-stop.
Milling the acids.
That album is out in November 1968. By the end of December, New Year's Eve, 1968, Charles Manson announces to the family, probably in very dramatic fashion, he announces, now is the time to prepare for Helter Skelter.
Did he just hear this on the album? Is that the name of a song?
Helter Skelter.
And he's calling this fucking movement Helter Skelter. after a Beatles song, like, is it?
Yeah. Theory that Manson had was named after Helter Skelter, which was the name of one of the songs on this Beatles album.
Isn't it a slide? You stick on a potato sack and you go down the slide. That's a Helter Skelter, yeah.
Yeah. I'll go through. Now, there was a few references in the album that he thought were them speaking directly to him. I should add that. He also thought that John and Paul and the lads expected him to write a record in response.
Okay, that's delusional. Well, we all know he's a psycho, but that's a real...
He was upset that they didn't show up in the court case to defend him.
He's Stan. He's Stan. Eminem Stan.
Okay, anyway, and it was the first time the really Beatles, they didn't like each other. Yoko's presence was being felt. They all recorded their bits separately and then they put them together. Beatles had had enough of each other when they wrote this album.
And were most of the songs a hit on that album?
It's considered one of their great albums, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Probably the best?
I would think it's, considered one of the best. One of the best albums of all time.
What's the one with all the people on the front?
Sgt. Pepper's.
That's the best.
Yeah, but I mean, this is still...
up there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty good. So Manson was telling the family, who he obviously wanted... He was very invested in them believing this theory that the Beatles were speaking directly to him, because if the Beatles were speaking to Charlie, then what Charlie's saying must be true. You know,
he's a big deal.
Yeah,
big deal.
Yeah. So,
but why is it in the song that he he's talking about going down a fucking slide?
Yeah. So there's a few songs
he's talking about me, man. Talking about me and that slide.
The Helter Skelter.
Do you? Don't you want me to love you? Yeah. Helter Skelter. I thought you would have been into that shit, man.
Helter Skelter.
He was interpreting Helter Skelter, the song about going up and going down. He thought the Beatles were singing about the blacks going up and the whites going down.
How could you even fucking gather that?
That is crazy.
So the lyrics are, when I get to the bottom, I go back to the top of the slide.
Then I stop and I turn and I go for a riot.
There's also mention of a monkey in the song. The family used to call Charlie the monkey. There was a mention of a monkey at some point in the song. There's a song Blackbird on that album.
Is that in that album?
Yeah. There's I know a lyric, that song. There's a lyric there. You're only waiting for this moment to arise. Have you seen the little piggy? And there's a sound that could be interpreted as a machine gun. So they thought that was about uprising and killing the piggies. They thought they were the little piggies and the rich.
Did the Beatles even... No, Charles Manson at this, at any point.
They're probably the only famous people who hadn't bumped into him at this stage.
Would they have heard, from other people about this thing if they were so close to...
No.
The sort of the same bubble of in the music industry, you know?
Maybe if they'd been over in LA at the time, they might have bumped into him. But no, they had no idea about him. There's a song, Sexy Sadie. There was a Susan Atkins, who was considered the best looking of the Manson women. And Manson had been calling her Sadie for over a year. They thought that was another sign. Sadie, Susan Atkins, she had been a stripper at a satanic church before she joined the Manson family.
She's just into the cult, so.
Mm-hmm. Rocky Raccoon, he thought the Paul McCartney's lyric about coons was a racial slur.
True. I mean, if you looked for it, you could find it. Yeah.
He was looking hard for this.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lyric about Rocky's revival. Basically, Charlie was telling the family, and maybe believing himself, that the song Rocky Raccoon was Paul McCartney's way of saying, yes, the black man is going to have a revival at your expense. There's another song, Happiness is a Warm Gun. Charlie was saying that was the Beatles instructing black people to pick up guns and kill white people. But he thought within the songs Honey Pie and Revolution 1, he thought the Beatles had coded invitations to him to write his own album. He thought in Honey Pie there was a demand from the Beatles to bring the entire Manson family over to England, which apparently he said to the family he was a bit put out. He's like, well, they're just too lazy to come over here, so they put in the song that we have to go over there.
Jesus.
Also never going to be able to afford fucking 20 ape laden flights.
Basically, this is, I mean, it's hard to make sense of it. It's complete madness.
Delusional.
It's off the wall stuff. And he's telling the family this while they're all off their heads. And he's telling them, this is coming. There was a family member, Brooks Poston, who said, he quoted or paraphrase Manson as saying, Charlie said, a group of real blacks would come out of the ghettos and do an atrocious crime in the richer sections of Los Angeles and other cities. They would do an atrocious murder with stabbing, killing, cutting bodies to pieces, smearing blood on the walls, writing pigs on the walls in the victim's own blood. Which, do you remember the first episode? That's exactly what the Manson family ended up doing.
Yeah.
It's like they wanted to get there first.
So it was a frame job, like he was trying to frame?
Basically, yeah, he kind of gets to the point. We'll see now.
Is he trying to manipulate them even more by saying to them that, look what they did? Like,
yeah, I think it gets to the point where his madness gets so much, he's like, right, well, I'm going to have to fucking kick this off. I have to wake up the white people. And then the white people will go after the black people, and the black people fight back and they'll win, and then we'll hide in the hole in the desert.
I didn't even like know all of this about him.
No.
The race stuff.
It just goes missing a bit, like, you know?
Yeah, it really. Even though he has a swastika on his face,
yeah,
it does.
And then like we're having the crack, like, oh, he's a good singer and all, and then he's just an absolute cunt, like,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
He's a good singer and all.
Yeah. Sick man.
Very sick. That's a very sick man. Very sick human bit. I just don't know how someone so sick in the head can become so influential. That's what I find incredible.
It's the vulnerability of people, though.
Mm.
And I think when people are at their lowest and need something, that they'll go for anything. Like, he's filling them with a lot of shit.
Drugs. LSD.
Yeah.
Paul Watkins was another family member who spoke later on. And he talked, and I think I'm just going to read this line to you now because it kind of shows the attitude Manson had towards black people. Like, I think it speaks for itself. Anyway, Paul Watkins was explaining that Manson was saying after the Helter Skelter had all happened and the Manson family re-emerged from their hole under the ground in the desert, Charlie would scratch the black man's fuzzy head, kick him in the butt and tell him to go pick the cotton and go be a good N-word.
When did he say that?
This was when he was telling them, this is how it's going to go. We're going to do all of the Helter Skelter stuff. And then this is what's going to happen afterwards.
It's super. It's the same thing as Hitler.
Yeah. So that's Helter Skelter. So now you have a good idea of what the Helter Skelter theory is.
That's where he lost me now.
Yeah. Was that? That was.
I'd be out the door and I was enjoying the horse rides. I was enjoying the ranch. I was enjoying the music. Even the free LSD. I'm there for that. As soon as all that Helter Skelter stuff comes in, I'm like, Charlie, come on the fuck. You're losing me here.
He went a bit too far.
Did he lose anyone? Did everyone still stick around for that?
It seems there was a very healthy retention rate within the Manson family membership before and after Charlie went full-blown racist.
I mean, apart from the racism, I admire the commitment. These are loyal women. These are loyal women.
I would have thought they'd be predisposed to free love and equality and all that stuff.
Yeah, you would think that. Well, yeah. He's just very convincing. Very convincing.
A lot of them fully believed he was Jesus, though.
He had a good beard.
They would say later on, and there are interviews you can see, with the ones who weren't arrested, like TV crews go back to the ranch where they were, not the Spawn Ranch, but the ranch they're at later on, the one we talked about in episode one, and they go and see them there. And they're there with their knives and their guns, and they're off their heads. Like, this is when Charlie and the rest of the family who've been arrested, they're all in prison and going to trial. But there's a load of them still left.
Is it weird that we're calling them Charlie? Like, are we not calling them Charles?
Charles.
Are we just, like, giving them a cute name, like
Charlie Manson?
We call him Charles. It's cutesy. It's demure.
Everyone called him Charlie, though.
Did they?
Yeah.
Okay, Charlie Manson.
That's why it's in my head.
Right.
I'll try and go back to Charles, but yeah. Every quote you see about him, they say, oh, Charlie did this, Charlie did that.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, they fully thought he was Jesus. They would say, oh, you saw him jump over the building. I saw him fly. And they'd ask him,
what the fuck?
Yeah. No, they testified they saw him
it's
fly.
The acid. Yes. If they weren't on the acid, you think they would have been like, get the fuck out of here, lads.
See your man's flying.
They would ask him, some of them would ask him, are you literally the son of man? And he just wouldn't answer. He'd just walk away.
Ah, oh, that's so sexy.
That's so easy, isn't it?
Oh.
That's all you need to be a guru.
I'd be like, yeah, he is the son of man. he doesn't need words. That's how fucking son of man he is.
When he was arrested, he signed his name what was it, Charles Manson, aka Jesus Christ? Something like that. Yes. So
aren't we all Jesus though?
Mm.
We're all a part of Jesus in some form.
Right. We're all the son of, go on.
Sorry. I'm not sorry. So I mentioned in the first episode, Terry Melcher. Do you remember him? Terry Melcher, he was son of Doris Day.
Yes.
He was the son of Doris Day, who was probably the biggest Hollywood star of the 50s. He was also the person who lived at the Cielo Drive house, which is where the murders took place with Sharon Tate. That he lived there directly before her. He was also a friend of Dennis Wilson's. So basically, Charles Manson, through Dennis Wilson, gets in touch with Terry Melcher. Terry Melcher, as mentioned in the last episode, he didn't think Charles Manson was really great. Terry Melcher was the definition of a spoiled rich kid working in the entertainment industry, but was also very good at his job, it seems. Had a good nose for who was going to work out.
Sorry, was Terry Melcher a producer?
Yes, he was.
Sorry. Roger,
he
was Roger that.
As most tellings of this story go, Terry Melcher did not like Charles Manson. All the time Manson was around the scene, the music scene, with Dennis Wilson. And there was another producer I mentioned last time, Greg Jacobson, who was a well-known producer in LA at the time. So Jacobson and Wilson thought Manson was great. Terry Melcher, who was one of their friends, said, "You're all nuts. This guy is terrible and he stinks and he keeps pulling knives on people in the studio. Let's just drop the whole Charles Manson thing." So Charles Manson had, through intermediaries, he'd given Terry Melcher his tapes and he'd said, "Listen, just have a listen. Come on out to the ranch and I'll give you a show. And trust me, you'll want to sign me. It'll be great." Terry Melcher at first just didn't listen to him, just threw him away. But he didn't tell Charles Manson. So Charlie Manson was kind of waiting around for the phone call, living in basically deluded reality and telling the family, "Don't worry, I'm going to get the call any day and I'm going to get the record deal." And 6 months at Dennis Wilson's house had increased everybody's appetite for a record deal.
I wonder now if Terry Melcher kind of was like, "I probably should have given that record deal," and he probably wouldn't have went off the deep end.
Terry Melcher has done some deep reflection on all of this.
Has he? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely would. Imagine some lunatic coming in here going, "Hey, I'll give you a podcast and I'm going to bleed and go mental."
Could happen.
That's and giving people ideas.
Podcasts are huge at the moment. Everyone has one. People just want a bit of that. They come in here. And
you never know.
So Terry Melcher lived at Cielo Drive. Manson had been there to drop something off or something with somebody. But early 1969, Terry Melcher moved out of there because his mother, Doris Day, so she had big debts, bad business deals. So he was like, "I got to move back to Malibu and look after her and try and save the family home and all this stuff." He's taking a lot of sleeping pills. He's drinking a lot. He kind of checked out from the music business for a couple of months or whatever. But he never got back to Charles Manson and said, he never told him he'd moved. Nobody really knew he'd moved. He'd kind of done it quietly. Word never got back to Manson.
Irish good boy.
Basically, Manson's getting on to your man, Greg Jacobson, and saying, "Will you get a message to Terry Melcher?" For some reason, Manson decided Terry Melcher was his last and only hope at this point to get that record deal. Early 1969, so you remember New Year's Eve, Manson announces to the family, having reviewed at some length the White Album, he tells them, "Listen, lads, we're going to get ready. Helter Skelter, it's coming soon." So Spahn Ranch starts becoming a bit of a training camp at this point. They're training on how to throw knives. They're doing these things called creepy crawls, which at first are kind of framed as being kind of fun. But he's saying to them, he's like, "Okay, you four, you drive out tonight and go to this house and sneak in while the people are there and just sit there." And they just sit there. They'd all dress in black and they just sit in someone's house while the person was watching.
What do you call creepy crawls?
Creepy crawls.
Just sit there without the person living there noticing and see how, if they could get away with just like doing that.
Yeah. And they would, as time went on, they'd start doing things like, "Well, we won't steal anything, but we'll move something. We'll start freaking them out." People didn't really lock all their windows and doors.
Simpler times.
Yeah. Early 1969, Los Angeles. A lot of open windows and doors. In the rich areas anyway.
They were all swingers.
March 1969, Terry Melcher gets back to Charles Manson. The phone finally rings.
No.
Yeah. No, he says, "We're going to come out, okay? We'll come out to this ranch you're living at and you can do a few of your songs."
Like a concert at the ranch?
Basically.
Yeah.
So you were asking earlier if he'd got the record deal, would that have put the skids on everything else? So they have been full tilt on Helter Skelter basically all year. We're in March now. the announcement was on New Year's Eve. The announcement was, we're going full war footing here. Terry Melcher calls, and instantly Charles Manson says, right, stop everything. Right? First of all, there's a lot of horse shit outside where we sleep. Clean that up. Second of all, start scrubbing the walls down. Third of all, the girls, you need to learn to bake because somebody has to make Terry a cake.
Well, in fairness,
he had the whole operation stop. He had them clean up everything. He literally had them learn how to bake cakes.
Is everyone just like, what about the fucking helter-skelter? What's going
on? Oh yeah, he's like, don't worry about that now. Don't worry about that.
And what about the race war?
He designed a script. He had it all mapped out. When Terry Melcher gets here, you stand here and you stand here and you say this and you say this. You definitely don't say this and you don't do all this. It was all choreographed down to a T. And the Manson family are all standing there waiting for Terry Melcher to show up.
Hang on now.
Yeah,
he doesn't go.
He didn't show up.
Left him hanging.
Never went.
Fucking hell.
Well, he didn't show up this time. And like, Manson had even had a bath. He never had a bath.
Did
he
not wash?
He washed. No. He washed himself for Terry. He bought a new deerskin outfit for Terry. Terry didn't show up.
Charles and he's Manson. He's left there with a fucking deer suit.
He's there in his new deer suit.
Ah,
standing there,
laying dressed up like Bambi.
You imagine the whole family are all lined up either side of him, like they're welcoming royalty, and he's stood up. Must have been very awkward
and embarrassing for him.
Well,
his girls watching him, like,
yeah,
cake in hand.
He was.
Oh, was it a Black Forest cat though? Do you know?
I imagine so.
Yeah, it would have to be, wouldn't it?
What else would it be? He was humiliated and he was outraged. He was not a happy cult leader.
Was he kicking everything or not? I'd say he's booting everything and throwing a tantrum and boxing walls and everything.
Yeah.
The whole lot. Like when you lose a game on FIFA.
Anyway, I do have a note here. It was Dennis Wilson and Charles Manson had driven Terry Melcher home one night. So Manson knew where, or he thought he knew where to find him at 10050 Cielo Drive. So he heads over there after Melcher doesn't show up.
The same night?
No, a few days later.
So does he go out? Is this the house that the murder's happening?
You'll find that out next time.
No, Owen, you can't do this to us.
So is this the house where the murder's going to happen?
This is a pretty important part of the story now where he visits. He goes out to what he thinks is Terry Melcher's house to say, Terry, you stood me up, what's going on? In a few days after this, he heads out there and it's a big moment. Terry doesn't live there anymore.
But this is the gaff where...
This is the house where the murders, this is Sharon, where Sharon Tate and the others will be murdered. Not too long, only a few weeks after this.
Go on.
This is where, well, you're going to find out more in the next episode.
Oh, what the you can't do that to us.
We're going to take a little breather here. The next episode, as Manson's dreams of stardom and fame, as they fade more and more, the madness, the darkness
comes to the surface.
One goes down, the other comes up. It seems to be
naturally
fairly in sync. And
spoiled.
Gets pretty weird. We're going to hear about possibly the strangest audition you've ever heard of. Very, very strange events. There's biker gangs. There's a dodgy nightclub run by the Manson family, run by Manson and the girls. There's this famous hole in the ground that they were going to live in to hide out from the race war and apocalypse. And there's also the first murder that is officially, anyway, attributed to the Manson family. That will be in the next episode.
Sounds meaty.
There's a lot to come.
What a crescendo.
Mm.
Can we just do it now?
Nope. It'll be with you soon. Episode 3.
Oh, well, it will be grand till then. It's all new.
Part 3 of the Manson family story.
Oh, I just can't wait, though.
Part 3 of 10.
I don't think so.
Okay, I'm excited.